And a cheerful good morning to everyone. This is Roy Porter in the NBC newsroom in New York, and the Big Four assembly in Moscow is the story of the day. We're going to try for a report direct from the Russian capital, but a series of sunspots is tangling up communications all over the world. Many places, of course, including Washington, are listed on our timetable today, but again, we must say, weather permitting. The news is fresh, so after a word from your announcer, I'll be back with your world news roundup.
Another weekend has rolled around. The rigors of winter weather show signs of easing a bit, and no doubt the temptation will come upon you to take the family out for a drive in the country or on a visit to friends. Let's remember, though, that there are many places here in the East where the roads are still slippery and treacherous. It's up to you to play safe when driving, to be courteous on the road, to keep well within the legal speed limit, and to see that your car is in proper running order. This means tires, brakes, headlights, and windshield wiper particularly. There are still far too many Americans being killed and crippled on our roads and highways, and it's up to you and me to do everything possible to bring down this accident rate. So remember, do your share by careful driving at all times. Now back to Roy Porter and the NBC News World Roundup.
The guest list is rising in Moscow. People on the streets of the Russian capital are chattering Amerikanskis when they see our pilots and delegation staff members. And for the first time since the war began and ended, the city is again becoming an international meeting place. Britain's Bevan was the first delegation chief to arrive. His train got in at noon today. France's Bideau may get in later in the day. Just what the reception plans include hasn't been told yet by the Russians. But I know from experience that when they really set their minds to it, they can turn out a welcoming party complete with fanfares. The joys of arrival will slump on Monday when the Big Four Conference holds its first meeting to begin the discussion on peace treaties for Germany and Austria, and a lot of hard work and probably stiff debate is prophesied for the coming weeks. Much of the activity in Moscow will be influenced by developments elsewhere in the world. The American attitude on Greece, about which we'll hear more very shortly, the discussions on atomic energy at the United Nations Security Council, and the Palestine question at Lake Success, London, and Jerusalem itself. Meanwhile, the Russian people are being let in very slowly on what's going on. They're barred from most of the public places, and about the only first-hand angles the man in the street will be able to pick up will be from the waiters and chambermaids who work in the hotels where the delegations are staying. What we will get in the way of conference news remains to be seen, although Molotov promised that there would be no censorship on press and radio coverage. And now let's start our daily reports with the first from the nation's capital. Here is Lee Feed in Washington.
This morning, instead of flying off into a 16-day visit to the sunny Caribbean, President Truman is wrestling with the cold facts about Greece and puzzling over how to convince Congress and the American people that we ought to get still deeper into the international mess. He knows it'll be a cold shock to the people, but it'll be pretty much of a surprise to Washington, too, the other day when Britain suddenly told us that they're pulling out, and just 23 days from now cutting off the little help they've been giving the Greeks. The facts the State Department experts have laid before the president are these. War devastated, Greece is hungry, Greek paper money is sinking fast, production's held on, black markets, British credit is running out, and Greece has no way of getting dollars. The Greek right-wing government is losing the confidence of a people who are losing hope. Our experts figure the Greek communists at only 10 or 15%, but they're working hard for control. And the ragtag Greek army can't beat down guerrilla bands. Our people don't think there's any active Russian pressure right now, but if the British move out and the government falls, communists will move into the vacuum and take over. They'd be welcome in Moscow. Washington's talking about a $250 million credit right away, half in arms for the Greek army, the other half in food and raw materials. And then over a five-year period, maybe another $100 million, to put Greece back on her feet and keep her on this side of the Iron Curtain. If not, then Greece may be the first to go communist, right on the flank of the strategic Dardanelles. Then it might be Turkey and maybe the whole Middle East. Besides, if we don't decide quickly to hold the line in the Mediterranean, Secretary Marshall, who sits down Monday to talk peace with Molotov at Moscow, will find himself with a weaker diplomatic hand. As the White House sees it, it's a question of going forward now or retreating from our whole foreign policy. These are the facts that President Truman will try to put over in a White House conference on Monday with the top leaders of both parties and with the American people. There's been no announcement yet on when the president's message will come. This is Lee Feed in Washington.
We'd hoped to bring you a direct report from Moscow this morning, but the radio circuits are none too good. Instead, let's hear what's happening today in Britain from James Brown in London.
I am sorry we were unable to contact Henry Cassidy to give you some first-hand news from Moscow, but I'll try to pinch it for him by telling you a little of the scene in which the conference will take place. First of all, during the 3 years I was in Moscow, it seemed to me that the city became more crowded each month. It has grown from a population of 1 million to 4 million in only 20 years. But the conference delegates will be well taken care of. Secretary of State Marshall will live with General Smith at the ambassador's residence, Spaza House, one of the most luxurious residences in the city, and once the property of a millionaire Russian industrialist. Other delegates, as well as foreign correspondents, will live either in the new 12-story Moskva Hotel or in the old Metropole Hotel. The Moskva Hotel is opposite the American Embassy in the center of the city and is far and away one of the best in all of Russia. The Metropole is noted for its huge rooms and old-fashioned bathtubs that are almost big enough to swim in. British Foreign Secretary Bevan will stay at his embassy, which is located directly across the river from the Kremlin and affords the best view of this walled sanctum of any place in Moscow. The conference itself will take place at the House of the Airmen, and the receptions will be held at Spiridonovka, the most ornate building in the city outside those in the Kremlin. It was once owned by a prince, and since the revolution has been used as a reception hall by the Foreign Office. The last time I attended a party at Spiridonovka was in 1938, when Maxim Litvinov surprised and delighted the gathering by dancing an expert rumba with the wife of a diplomat from Poland. This is James Brown in London.
And here's some more direct reports from Moscow, as long as we can't get them in over our radio circuits. As I told you, Britain's Bevan arrived at the White Russian Railroad Station about noon today, and he made a statement. He said, "We shall spend the days ahead in trying to make some peace which will prevent any future aggression and let the whole world live in security." He said, "I'm also very glad to be back in Moscow again and bring you greetings from the British people to the people of Russia." Bevan was reported to held up some hours up at Brest-Litovsk. That's quite a phrase, isn't it? That's on the Polish border, where train travelers have to change from the Western Standard Gauge to the Russian Broad Gauge cars. Hundreds of Russians yesterday were working on the Moscow streets, cleaning them of snow and ice in sunny weather, and others worked at painting and cleaning and otherwise refurbishing the aviation industry building, where the ministers are going to hold their sessions. The railroad station waiting their arrival and the Metropole and the Moskva hotels were also cleaned up. At the White Russian station, little fir trees were placed near black marble busts of Lenin and Stalin, decorating the platform and approaches, and the main hall was closed. Both of the hotels in Moscow have been redecorating their rooms. At the Metropole, the attendants were reported to have been issued new uniforms for the first time since the war, and visitors were asked to remove their galoshes at the door to avoid soiling the newly swept carpets. At the Moskva, where a big white statue of Stalin dominates the lobby, nobody was let in, except foreigners and the Russian help. No word leaked out as to what preliminary diplomatic work might be going on in the Kremlin and the Foreign Office, but some visitors had to double up on their rooms. All seemed sure of places to stay and enough to eat, despite Moscow's strict food rationing and housing shortage. In one good restaurant, for example, five foreigners sent a message through this morning telling about a meal they had last night. It included an appetizer, soup, steak, vegetables, coffee, bread and butter, and what do you suppose it cost? $7.50 per person, including tips. The Russian Tourist Organization has taken over more guides for the sightseers, and theaters and other places of entertainment are planning special programs. The Palestine problem has created not only a tough military situation in the Holy Land, but a diplomatic headache as well for the United Nations. Today it appears that the final move is up to Great Britain if John Bull wants the UN to take over discussion on Palestine. It came through objections from the United States, that the issues have not been presented in concrete form, and that the proposition must be clearly stated before the United Nations can give any consideration whatsoever. The case can be stated in many different ways, but, say the Americans, it must be stated first, and the action will follow. Now about the Greek situation, and we have some news here from Salonika this morning. If the United States, it seems they think down there, takes over the British role in Greece, she'll be welcomed as a possible savior by the peaceful middle road half of the 7 million Greeks. The peasants and the non-communist workers who constitute a majority of the population will be the strongest supporters for the United States if she assumes the complicated political and financial task, because these people have, for a long time, been pro-American. Already vigorously denouncing American intervention are the extreme left and a group of business political men growing rich in the present confused situation. The communists furiously condemn what they call the third occupation, that is, German, British, and possibly now American. The conservative business political group warns bitterly, beware of Americans bearing dollars. On the Greek right are the rigid monarchists with about 35% of the political strength. The extreme left or the communists have about 15%. Between these are the broad mass of people who just want peace, but they lack leadership, and this forces them to vote left or right. As a direct business investment, American participation in Greece would yield almost no return. As a long-term political investment, it might halt a further Soviet march toward the Mediterranean. You know, British policy has been to keep the Russians out of Greece, to prevent inflation by propping up the drachma with British pounds, and to coordinate establishment of British markets with the reconstruction of Greece. There are about 40,000 British troops in Greece. Official policy is to withdraw them as soon as possible. Well, we've got some of our old standbys with us again today, and these developing stories really get familiar, don't they? The first is our old friend Mount Etna, the volcano in Sicily, and it seems that she's quieted down again, but she's still rumbling around inside, and new craters may break out at any moment. There's more news. I'll be back in a moment. Now here's your announcer.
The American Red Cross has since the first of the month been embarking on a nationwide drive for operating fund for the coming year. The campaign will continue through the month of March, and it's to you, the American public, that the Red Cross turns for support to the tune of more than $60 million. These dollars, which you contribute, help the Red Cross to carry on its services in hundreds of different ways. Clubs and canteens for the men in our armed forces, advice and financial aid for veterans, volunteer work in our veterans and military hospitals, health and safety education programs in your own hometown. Then, of course, there's the work for which the Red Cross has won its greatest fame in peacetime. Every time you read in the papers about a flood, a devastating fire, or a sudden epidemic, you'll read, too, how the Red Cross has been Johnny on the spot with food, medical supplies, blankets, and temporary shelter. Maybe it's always somebody else that gets involved in these disasters, but someday it may be you or your own town. Give freely. Now back to Roy Porter in the NBC newsroom.
Secretary of State Marshall in Berlin today said that the completion of a four-power security pact against Germany is of the highest importance. He told American correspondents that such a pact for a 40-year period would clear away many difficulties now blocking Allied peace settlements for Germany and Austria. And here's a news story just off the wires about a guerrilla attack on a passenger train in central Burma near Mandalay. The report, which comes from Rangoon, says that 28 persons were killed, including 7 British soldiers. And from the Japanese island of Shikoku, a shipload of high school girls is missing, 267 of them. And that's your world news roundup for this morning. I'll be back at the same time on Monday. Until then, this is Roy Porter wishing you a very pleasant weekend from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.